on this seventh day of February 2011 in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 18, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 47. Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna.
Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna.
Paradharmat Swanushtitat.
Paradharmat Swanushtitat.
Sabhava Niyatam Karma.
Sabhava Niyatam Karma.
Kurvanapno Tikilbisham.
Kurvanapno Tikilbisham.
It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Purport. One's occupational duty is prescribed in the Bhagavad Gita. As already discussed in previous verses, the duties of a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra are prescribed according to their particular modes of nature. One should not imitate another's duty. A man who is by nature attracted to the kind of work done by Shudras should not artificially claim to be a Brahman, although he may have been born into a Brahman family. In this way, one should work according to his own nature. No work is abominable if performed in the service of the Supreme Lord. The occupational duty of a Brahman is certainly in the mode of goodness. But if a person is not by nature in the mode of goodness, he should not imitate the occupational duty of a Brahman. For a Kshatriya, or administrator, there are so many abominable things. A Kshatriya has to be violent to kill his enemies. And sometimes a Kshatriya has to tell lies for the sake of diplomacy. Such violence and duplicity accompany political affairs. But a Kshatriya is not supposed to give up his occupational duty and try to perform the duties of a Brahman. One should act to satisfy the Supreme Lord. For example, Arjun was a Kshatriya. He was hesitating to fight the other party. But if such fighting is performed for the sake of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there need be no fear of degradation. In the business field, also, sometimes a merchant has to tell so many lies to make a profit. If he does not do so, there can be no profit. Sometimes a merchant says, "Oh, my dear customer, for you, I am making no profit." But one should know that without profit, the merchant cannot exist. Therefore, it should be taken as a simple lie if a merchant says that he is not making a profit. But the merchant should not think that because he is engaged in an occupation in which the telling of lies is compulsory, he should give up his profession and pursue the profession of a Brahmin. That is not recommended. Whether one is a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Shudra doesn't matter if he serves by his work the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Brahmins who perform different types of sacrifice sometimes must kill animals because sometimes animals are sacrificed in such ceremonies. Similarly, if a Kshatriya engaged in his own occupation kills an enemy, there is no sin incurred. In the third chapter, these matters have been clearly and elaborately explained. Every man should work for the purpose of Jagya or for Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. The conclusion is that everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired, and he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakya Chakshu Unminatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, as always, this verse needs to be understood in the context of other verses, specifically those that have preceded it. And you'll see this, these two very important verses. By following one's qualities of work, everyone can become perfect. Now, please hear from me how this can be done. And text 46 means that one, by performing one's own work, if by doing that he worships the Lord, the source of everything, one can attain perfection. So the idea is that the Krishna is concerned how the society at large can become elevated. He's not simply speaking this for an elite few who can practice some very esoteric type of yoga. The very idea that, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield, which there are thousands and thousands of men, and it's battle for the for the earth, for the kingdom, the great kingdom of the earth in which millions of people are involved. And Krishna is his whole purpose here is to reinstitute Dharma, which has been obscured by the advent of many demons. And Duryodhana is trying to usurp the throne. So the idea here is that Krishna is concerned about everyone, and people are engaged in various occupations according to their psychophysical nature, or as described here, the modes they have attained. The modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. So somehow the idea is to bring that activity that we're already doing into the channel of yoga, the channel of bhakti yoga. How can that be done? So that's a great art. And what Krishna is saying here is that if you can learn from a realized soul the art of using the fruits of your work and your special skills that you have, either as a you know, merchant, as a laborer, as an intellectual, as an administrator, in the service of the Lord, then you can achieve perfection in that way. So that's what this point is that there needs to be smooth working of society. If everyone is dissatisfied in their position and they're trying to take some other's position artificially, then chaos ensues. It doesn't really matter what you do as long as it's not grossly sinful. If you are able to channel it into the devotional service of the Lord called dovetailing. Now, in the modern world, Srila Prabhupada, by his great effort and devotion, created this ISKCON society. Now, the ISKCON society is much larger than what's in these temples here. Obviously, most of you don't even live in a temple, you know. But you're still interested in devotional service to the Lord. So this great congregation of devotees, those who want to progress in bhakti, in yoga, in self-realization, comprise a large group. But they have to live in the world. They have to perform their activities. So the idea is, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved in his discussion with Ramananda Roy, don't do anything radical. He said, Jnani piyasam unapasyana mandaheva, jivanti sanmukoditam bhavadiya vartam, sthanestita. This word sthanestita means stay in your position. You know, you don't have to do anything radical. But shudigatam tanuvan manobir. The first thing we have to understand is that our own efforts to try to figure out the transcendence, the supreme absolute truth, which is beyond the realm of our senses and mind, is going to fail. Lord Brahma himself said it fails, and he's the most intelligent in the universe. So how to know him? One has to give that up and simply listen to hear the vibrations emanating from the mouth of these realized souls. Jivanti san mukaditam. Mukaditam literally means from the lips, mouth. Bhavadiya vartam. News of you. The word varta means news. Good news, you know. The gospel. So bhavadiya vartam, your activities, your lila, your philosophy, your speaking, Krishna speaking here. This has to be heard from the proper source. And in that mood, then stani sitak, stay in your position. Shuddhi gatam, follow this path of hearing. But you can't just sit there and hear and out in one ear and out the other. Is it tanu van manob here? Very important phrase. You're hearing in this certain mood. And that tanu means body or senses, man means mind, and manobi means, vachobi means words. So van means words, and manobi means mind. So the idea is to listen to the instructions of Krishna, say in the Bhagavad Gita, to let them, to contemplate them, think about them, apply your intelligence, to follow them with your senses, as Arjuna will reveal he's going to do. Yes, I will do as you say, kadushe vachanantava, and to repeat them with your words. If you can do those simple things, then you can conquer the unconquerable Lord. God is known as Ajita. No one can conquer him. He's all powerful. He's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. But yet he agrees to be conquered by those who develop love for him. It's like a little child, right? The mother, the father, they have this little child. So in one sense, the child conquers the parent by love. Whatever he needs, they'll try to do. If he's crying, then everything stops. What's wrong with little Jimmy, you know? And then he's conquered them. You know, everything is stopped, and they have to try to do. So the love bond is the only thing that Krishna responds to. He has everything else. So how to develop that? That comes from initially from pure hearing, from the hearing in the proper mood, and accepting the words of the great souls, of the realized souls, accepting Krishna's word. So here, this simple, you know, this word, suanushtitat, this word comes up several times in the second chapter, first canto, where Krishna says, what is it? Dharmak suanushtitak pungsan. Vishwakshana katasya no padi yerditim shamehivi kevalam. That's the first time it comes. So that suanushtitat means very nicely performing your dharma. But Vishrakshana Katasya Notpariyate, if that activity of working, however you may work in this world, if it doesn't evoke or stimulate attraction for hearing about God, hearing about Krishna, it's completely useless labor. This is the declaration of Sudha Goswami right in the Bhagavatam. Shrama Evi Kevalam. And that goes for any kind of not just swadharma, not just your activity of work, but also any kind of religion that you may have. If you have a so-called religion, and it's a Sunday religion, it's once a week, and you go to church in the morning, and then in the afternoon you watch the Super Bowl, sorry, that religion is useless. That religion is not getting you any closer to God, because you're not stimulating your desire to hear about Krishna. You know? In other words, you're not becoming God conscious, you're not becoming advanced or purified by that. So this is the criterion. And so the suanushtitat, you may do it very nicely. There are so many experts out in this world who do so many things, you know, computer work, medical work, this work, that work. You can become very expert. But all of it is useless if it doesn't evoke interest for the message of God. So that's what Krishna is saying here. Stay in your position, you know, act according to your psychophysical nature, dovetail as much as possible in the service of God, and hear the message of God, the message of Bhagavad Gita. Try to act according to the rules, and then one can progress on the path. Now, if one can take up full time bhakti, then swadharma becomes less important. You know, we can do anything as Prabhupada did. He cooked, he cleaned, you know, he preached. He did everything that was necessary in order to push on the movement. You tell me, what is the varna and ashram of someone dancing and chanting Hare Krishna? Doesn't pertain. Doesn't matter whether you're brahmachari, sannyasi, whether you're a kshatriya or a sudra. If you're chanting Hare Krishna and dancing, it's completely transcendental. It has no... The other stuff, the varna and the ashram, is just a framework by which we can purify our existence. And society can go on smoothly. Because if there is chaos in society, it becomes very difficult to practice any kind of yoga. You need to have a place, an ashram, a condition where there's some kind of ability to have a peaceful mind. And if there's a war going on out on Grand Avenue, we can't sit here and have Bhagavad Gita class. You know? That's why we have there's a structure here, imperfect as it may be. So this social aspect is very important if it's going to be a mass movement. There's always a few who are going to go off to the Himalayas and practice yoga. But that's not what Krishna is interested. He's interested in everybody becoming pure and progressing back toward him, where you can be happy and secure forever. The only place. Any questions on this verse 47?
Yes, sir. So Prabhupada said that in this day and age everyone's a shudra.
Prabhupada did say, he quoted the Shastra, Kalo Shudra Shambhava.
So then,
Janmadai Jai Shudra, yeah.
So then, if we are not supposed to take on the duties of other varnas?
The point is not that everyone is a Shudra. The point is everyone is born a Shudra. In other words, what this verse says is that Janmana Jayate Shudra. But then it says, Samskarad Bhaved Dvija, Veda Bhatad Bhaved Vipra, Brahmajana Aditi Brahmana. That one can become purified from any platform. Krishna himself says in the ninth chapter, Mami Parta Vibhasha Diye Bisu Papi Yonaya, born in sinful, from sinful parents, in a sinful family. Well, that includes most of us, according to the criteria of Bhagavad Gita. But If one takes shelter of Krishna, you can come back to him. In other words, you can become completely purified. That's the whole point. You see, the tendency is, and I was thinking about this recently, that the material mind always takes the present condition to be who you really are. You know? Once, you know, I was a successful businessman. But now, I'm failed. Now I'm just sitting on the Bowery. It used to be the Bowery. I'm sitting on any street. This is who I really am now. That's a dream. But this is also a dream. You're not going to be, eventually you'll change bodies completely. The point is that we're always in flux. Our mind is always in flux. Our body is certainly changing moment to moment. Over a period of years, you really notice it, but it's obviously changing. So our mind is always changing. The question is, can we take hold of the direction in which it changes? Do we have to simply be victimized by our circumstances? Lurching from one situation to another helplessly? No, that's the whole purpose of a discipline, a yogic discipline, is that you can improve, that the sinners can become saints. And if the saints aren't careful, they can become sinners again. It's up to us how we associate with the modes, how we associate with others. And that's where instruction comes in, because it's an art, how to navigate. You know, this dangerous world. This is padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Very, very, you know, wonderful verse Prabhupada would always quote. There's danger at every step. What's the danger? Not necessarily you'll have an accident on I-5, but the danger is that you'll come in touch, you know, you'll associate with something or someone that will affect your conscience adversely, and you'll go down in a syndrome, and before you know it, you're in the modes of ignorance, which produces madness and suffering like anything. That's the danger. If you don't direct it, if you don't say, you don't get the spiritual strength, is it no? I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to hear that. I'm not going to taste that. Rather, I'm going to do this because I know this is purifying. Just think of the there's constantly new things coming about the diet. You know, what's a healthy diet to eat? The big problem all over the world, actually, obesity. Is big everywhere. Anywhere where there's any prosperity, people tend to eat too much of the wrong kind of foods. You know, so then there's a whole industry of how to eat right, how to live right. You know, it's obviously that at one point, you know, mostly people when they're young, the kids are jumping around. You're healthy nowadays. Even the kids are getting fat. But aside from that, you know, and then you changed. You did a certain amount of thing, and you ate the wrong thing, and you got habituated to eating the wrong thing. You didn't, and now you're fat and you're sick. You know, well, how can I get back to my nice, swell, healthy self? Well, it takes discipline. You have to say no to this, and you have to say yes to that. Everyone's interested in the diet, right, because it's a physical thing. Well, the same thing is true for anything you consume. We don't just consume food. You consume things that you see. You consume sounds. That's why in the second chapter, Krishna says, Vishaya vinivartante nirahara siddhihina. Ahara means to eat. It means to consume. But here he applies it to all the vishayas, all the things that you can enjoy out there. You know, so that's seeing, it's sights, it's sounds, it's everything. So if the things we eat obviously changes us, you know, for the better or worse, the things we see, the things we hear, the things we think about also can be good or for evil. So Krishna consciousness is the art and the science of controlling those things that you... That the sounds, mostly the sounds that you hear, and the thoughts that you have, the people you associate with, so for upliftment, for purification, for going to perfection. That's the whole idea. So, was there a question that I'm answering here? Oh, the thing about the shudra. Everyone's a shudra. Yeah. So we're all shudras. We begin as shudras, but we don't have to stay that way. If we follow Krishna consciousness, we can become Brahmins and more than Brahmins. We can become Vaishnavas, which is the purest way of life. Anyone else? Yes, go ahead, Prabhu.
Yeah, it looks like the third chapter, 35 verse, the first half of the verse is exactly the same.
Yes, it is. So Dharma Vigana.
And there it's saying Paradharma Bhayava.
Yes, if you practice another's dharma, in other words, occupation, it can become very fearful because you find yourself out of your depth, you know, you're not qualified, you're faking it, you know, and then you get this.
But we also know from Bhagavad that Vayam Vidya Vinivesha, Because of the absorption in the second.
Yeah, ultimately that is. But even aside from that, even if you're just nicely situated in your Svadharma, you know, that in itself is a cause of kind of peace in your life. And it makes it possible to practice higher things. If you're forced to do work that you can't do, or today where you can't even do the work that you're suited to do, you know? I mean, this is a good example. We have PhDs coming out of the colleges who can't even get a job flipping burgers. Forgive me, but that's the metaphor for the lowest thing you can do. It's horrible, and they have like I mentioned, they have these big debts that they hope to pay off with a good job. No job is there. So yet if they can get it, then they have to do this menial work. So it's a source of great dissatisfaction. So the intellectuals need to be able to do intellectual work, teaching the Brahminical work and so forth.
Other question I have, same verse, is that so the other classes like Vaishyas and Shudras, they will be also, let's say, engaging in Krishna consciousness. And while engaged in their own work, according to Bhagavatam, it will, Janyati Archu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayanahitukam. So it will generate, if they're doing it properly, some vairagya and jnana. Once the jnana starts to develop, they will probably not feel like doing their work, because they will start feeling like Brahman, because the knowledge is developing now, right?
Not necessarily, because the point is that that kind of jnana is beyond the control of Svadharma. In other words, someone can be very happy, just like we had a devotee in Vrindavan. And he joined like early on at the opening. I forget his name now. Rajendranand reminded me. But he spent his whole career just, cooking. Now, cooking is, by its nature, it's not, it's kind of a physical thing to do. There's a certain shudra element to it, it's not studying, and teaching. He wasn't doing that. In fact, he wasn't even chanting his rounds. And they asked Prabhupada, is this okay? And Prabhupada, when he would go around, the circumambulator, they'd always hear him singing. He would sing bhajans, while he was cooking. He cooked every offering. He cooked every offering for many, many years in the Krishna Balaram temple. That's eight offerings a day. So he's always in the kitchen singing, working hard, and going. So it wasn't like that the jnana had developed, because of his purity. He didn't want to do anything else. He was perfectly satisfied doing that. So that's a different aspect. He had a question. Go ahead. Yeah. A shudra is like a manual laborer. Someone who just knows how to, work with his hands and things like that.
What are the different ones?
Yeah, okay, we'll go through, because we just had that. There's a thing called this varna ashram. Varna ashram is a combination of two words called varna and ashram. The varna aspect refers to the social activity. And we have generally the Brahmins, who are like intellectuals, teachers of society. In the Kshatriyas are those who are, where we have like charisma, they're natural leaders, they could be military men, administrators, there are people like that. And then there's Vaishyas, those who can make money, or in the Vedic culture, mostly a lot of farmers, especially cow protection like that. And then the Shudras, you have a large number of people who are just good with their hands, and they generally serve the other classes. Now, this only works without oppression and distortion when Krishna's in the center. When you have the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras all working together for glorification of the Lord. That in itself makes you satisfied internally, and you don't feel that you're being oppressed. Oh, I can also do the Vaishya work and so forth. Then you become satisfied, and not only that, but those at the top are not exploiting the ones at the bottom. They're protecting them and they're serving them. So it's varnash, and then the ashram system refers to the different what the Christian call the stations of life, and so you have student life, and then you have householder life. Mostly people enter householder life, and then at a certain point, according to Vedic culture, you have retired life, and finally what we call sannyas for the men, where not everybody takes it, but you become a wandering mendicant, and you're trying to become detached from the material world and become completely absorbed in God consciousness. So these are the different varnas and ashrams. And it's originally that was the Veda culture, but it's become distorted because there's so much Western influence in modern age, you know. But ideally, society as a whole will be organized in that way for progressive march toward purity.
So for like an intellectual that's like really interested in spirituality, like is it like out of his league to be just living a life as a cook?
Yes, things are all mixed up in the modern age. So basically, this movement is really transcendental to Varna Ashram. And like as you say, we have people who cook here, you know, but they're also studying the Shastra. Everyone is meant to study, you know, this and become well-versed. But you'll find that some take to it easier. They're able to write and, you know, explain. So they may get positions as in a Brahminical field. Teachers, we have schools and things like that. So, one can maintain himself however he can, but the idea is to add Krishna consciousness. I mentioned that at the beginning. And then as that is added, then you and you become more involved, like in the association of devotees, you take on certain duties and things that are suited to you, to your psychophysical nature, your Swadharma. Okay? I want to try to cover a couple more if it's okay. This is a important section. We're coming up to the climax here of the whole book. Sahajam karma konteya.
Sahajam karma konteya.
Sadosham apinachaje.
Sadosham apinachaje.
Sarvalambha hitoshena. Dumenagnir ivavrata. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. Report. In conditioned life, all work is contaminated by the material modes of nature. Even if one is a Brahman, he has to perform sacrifices in which animal killing is necessary. Similarly, a Kshatriya, however pious he may be, has to fight enemies. He cannot avoid it. Similarly, a merchant, however pious he may be, must sometimes hide his profit to stay in business. Or he may sometimes have to do business on the black market. These things are necessary. One cannot avoid them. Similarly, even though a man is a Shudra serving a bad master, he has to carry out the order of the master, even though it should not be done. Despite these flaws, one should continue to carry out his prescribed duties, for they are born out of his own nature. A very nice example is given herein. Although fire is pure, still there is smoke. Yet smoke does not make the fire impure. Even though there is smoke in the fire, fire is still considered to be the purest of all elements. If one prefers to give up the work of a Kshatriya and take up the occupation of a Brahman, he is not assured that in the occupation of a Brahman there are no unpleasant duties. One may then conclude that in the material world no one can be completely free from the contamination of material nature. This example of fire and smoke is very appropriate in this connection. When in winter time one takes a stone from the fire, sometimes smoke disturbs the eyes and other parts of the body. But still one must make use of the fire despite disturbing conditions. Similarly, one should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupational duty in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, when connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and that is self-realization. So here, kind of what comes out of this is one has to be determined to continue with the service. I remember this verse was often used. You often heard it in the ashram, you know, because you're asked to do some service, and usually when you begin, you're not too good at it, you know, cooking and this or that, you know. So everything is covered by some fault. So don't give it up. Continue. And Krishna will gradually give the intelligence to perfect the service. The perfect example of these artists is just incredible, you know, how they started. Many of them were rather crude. Some of them were fairly good, but they got so much better just by persevering. You know, tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Krishna gives the intelligence if you want to serve him so that you can serve him better and better. So in devotional service, we need to be enthusiastic and patient and determined to overcome the difficulties. Now, especially, you know, those who are full-time devotees, you find that what happens is that your motivation for devotional service flags, you know, because we're so conditioned that we're going between two worlds here. And everything keys on your motivation. As Krishna will say, I think he's already said, that even if you kill someone, if it's free of false ego, there's no sin. And the example is the soldier, you know, in a righteous war. Forget about the wars today. But in a good war, when there's really evil on the other side, and you fight, you kill the enemy, you get a medal. But if you go home and murder someone, you get arrested. You know, so everything depends on the motive. So if our motive is pure, then whatever work we're doing is good. And if it matches our psychophysical nature, then we'll get better and better at it. You know, we'll naturally be able to do it better and better for Krishna. So that's the idea here, is that don't worry, there may be some fault in what you're doing, but if it's in the realm of devotional service, then Krishna accepts it as perfect. This is the special quality of devotional service, is that it's the desire that you have that's the ultimate factor. Now, of course, we should try to do the service as well as possible, but it doesn't matter, even if it's a total failure, you know. I mean, sometimes you try to do something in devotional service and it doesn't come out. Just see how Prabhupada, you know, the perfect example, when he was starting his movement in India after retirement, he had a whole society there called the League of Devotees. You know, he was set up in Jhansi, thought he had a building, you know, and he started preaching. He said, well, you know, but somehow he lost that building. All the effort he put into it, you know, you could say, well, it was lost. But nothing was lost. The people he contacted, whatever Krishna contest they had in the chanting, reading the literature, participating, that's their eternal benefit. And Prabhupada went on with his, you know, mission of trying to print books. He went to Vrindavan, you know, this whole episode happened. And in a sense, you know, from the perspective of today, you could see, well, that was Krishna's arrangement, because if he succeeded in Jhansi, maybe he wouldn't have come to America. He was preaching in English, you know, it would have been in India. Everything would have been in India. Where would we be? If you didn't, you know. So sometimes this, you know, this failure is the pillar of success. If you're determined, you learn from the failure and you go on with your service. And that's an advantage that devotees have. Because the materialists, if they fail, they fail. You know, they made an investment, it was all selfish, they lost all the money, it's gone. You know, but if a devotee invests his time, his effort, something, and it doesn't pan out, it's a success. Because Krishna sees the effort. There's a nice phrase. What is it? I forget it. Bhava Grahi Janardana. Bhava, I'm sorry. Bhava Grahi Janardana. Thank you. So Bhava in this case means your mood. You know, Grahi means he understands, he grasps. Janardana, Krishna, sees the mood that you're doing in it. You know, some millionaire comes in here and gives $10. You know, he knows. Krishna knows. Okay, he's giving a little token here. But some poor man scrapes up, you know, $5 and puts it in there. That's a big service. Krishna accepts that service. You know, just like the, you know, the building of the bridge, Ram Bridge, a little spider is giving his all, you know, putting a little, you know, twig on there. He's just as big as Hanuman with the boulders, because it's the percentage that counts. Krishna's seeing how much your bhava is in. So don't worry about the faults. Keep working in Krishna consciousness and all will come out right. Asakta buddhi sarvatra.
Asakta buddhi sarvatra.
Chitatma vikataspraha.
Chitatma vikataspraha.
Naishkarmya siddhim paramam.
Naishkarmya siddhim paramam.
Sanyase nadigacchati.
Sanyase nadigacchati.
One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain, by practice of renunciation, the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. Real renunciation means that one should always think himself part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and therefore think that he has no right to enjoy the results of his work. Since he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the results of his work must be enjoyed by the Supreme Lord. This is actually Krishna consciousness. The person acting in Krishna consciousness is really a sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life. By such a mentality, one is satisfied because he is actually acting for the Supreme. Thus, he is not attached to anything material. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. A sannyasi is supposed to be free from the reactions of his past activities, but a person who is in Krishna consciousness automatically attains this perfection without even accepting the so-called order of renunciation. This state of mind is called yogarudha, or the perfectional stage of yoga. As confirmed in the third chapter, yasvatma rotar eva syat, one who is satisfied in himself has no fear of any kind of reaction from his activity. So this is now, Krishna's recapitulating things that he's said before. This word naishkarmya is key here. Naishkarmya is a state of activity in which one is neither incurring any good or bad karma. The idea is that any kind of karma brings you back. Krishna defines karma at the beginning of the eighth chapter as that activity which produces another body. In other words, if you do something against the laws of God, laws of nature, then you'll have to suffer for it in this life or a future life. Now, if you do something very good, suppose you're very generous, you give charity, you perform sacrifices, then you'll enjoy good karma. But you have to enjoy it. In other words, you have to enjoy it either on this planet or higher planet or something. That keeps you here. That keeps you within the bounds of the material world. And eventually that punya, that result of your pious activity, runs out, and back again you come to Martya Loka. So you really haven't done anything. So whether you have good karma or bad karma, it's all bad, because it keeps you in the realm of the material world, where it's just a lot of, birth and death and suffering. So the trick is how to act and how to work in this world, sustains one's life, without incurring any good or bad karma. And that's called naishkarmya, which really means devotional service. Because if you're working for the benefit of God, for Krishna, then there's no reaction. And indeed, all of your previous latent reactions are burned up. Not only don't you incur any new stuff, but the old ones are being burned up. That's why you can see devotees, when they get serious about devotional service, that their whole being kind of clears up. They become more peaceful, their visage changes. Because you carry the burden of your karma with you. You can see, devotees can see. As people age, the record of their activities is in their face. Some people become, there's a lot of fear in there and anxiety and whatever it is, it's material. Some people are rather pure, they've done good work, and you see they're more peaceful and happy. But generally, in this age, there's a lot of pain going on. But devotees change. Even the very face changes. Because the eons of karma is being burned away. Suddenly you've cleared off a path. And Krishna promises that. He promises that in this chapter. I will get rid of all your, sin, whatever sin you perform. Do not worry. Just surrender to me. Now here, because of the way the language works and because of our previous conditioning, when we hear that everything has to be done for the pleasure of Krishna, what about me? Don't I get to enjoy anything? But the point is that is the greatest pleasure. When you actually do it, you experience it. It's hard to do it from the outside. But everything, just being Krishna conscious, which itself is very pleasing to Krishna. Don't think it's not. What to speak of actively serving Him, glorifying, helping others to become Krishna conscious, helping devotees. That provides the greatest inner happiness that just covers over any kind of sensual pleasure, even up to and including sex and drugs. Is that taken, that's the, really, even that? Yes, even that becomes insignificant. Becomes insignificant when this happens, of pleasing Krishna, because we're part and parcel of Krishna. In other words, if Krishna's pleased, and we're conscious of His being pleased due to our efforts, that's the greatest pleasure. That's the greatest pleasure. Krishna, God, has an unlimited power to enjoy. Why not? If He's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, why isn't He omni enjoying and everything else? What I'm saying? He's an Anandamaya Vyasa. Everything He does is blissful. Krishna's never sad, And He has an infinite capacity to enjoy. But the way He does it is, we can learn a lot by looking at our own lives. What's really enjoyable in this world, Interactions with people we love, that's really it. The sense pleasures come and go, but something that really touches you, that you're ready to die for, that you're ready to travel across the country, across the world to experience, is love. It's loving exchange with someone who loves you. And, you know. But unfortunately, that's very fleeting in this world. You know, here today, gone tomorrow. So if that's true of our, you know, our little lives, what about the infinite? That's what he enjoys. When you refine it to the greatest degree, it's the exchange of love between God and the soul that is the ultimate reality, and that's what's happening in the spiritual world. You know, that's what's so great about this philosophy. There is a description in detail of what happens in the spiritual world, what you can experience. You know, the details of the activities we call pastimes, lila. That's real life. This is a dream. Haven't you noticed? It's always changing from one thing to another. It's never steady. Like a dream. It's very ephemeral. So being able to awaken that consciousness should be the goal of life. And it's done. You know, this is the perfection of renunciation. Renunciation sounds, you know, pretty heavy when you think about it. No, 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 no. You know, renunciation means not this, not this, not this. No sex, no drugs, no this, no that. Oh my God, that's my life. You know, but it's not. When you have the positive, you know, building relationship, just chanting Hare Krishna, just glorifying the Lord, absorbing oneself in these sound vibrations, spiritual sound, then you realize the perspective. It becomes possible to give up more and more. Ultimately, you have to give it all up. We recently had a death here, you know, with Padmavati. And, you know, we all come to that point. It's an experience you go through. It's not the end. It's an experience you all have to go through. So think about what it means. Everything connected to this body is gone. It's being taken away from you. You cannot stop it. What's left? Your consciousness. You're not gone. But what do you take with you? You know, do you take with you so many material, unfulfilled material desires? So many remembrances of bad things you did? That's just how your sin comes out. You know? And you have to be punished. You feel that you should be punished. Or do you take with you your service to Krishna, which doesn't stop with the senses. It's not dependent on this body. Everything else is dependent, but that's not dependent, you see. So you know, she was a devotee. She wasn't, you know, pure by ordinary standards. But she had the great good fortune to have the holy name vibrating, the atmosphere of devotees there, you know, at the end. And that's a very, very important thing. What you think about, your main thought. So we should think, you know, seriously about that. Whatever we build in relation to this body is finished, is temporary. Whatever we accomplish in relationship to Krishna is permanent. And that will take us very far. I wanted to leave a little time for reading Krishna Lila, because we want to learn more about who Krishna really is.